Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and the conversation we're calling Don't Feed the Animals. Have you ever noticed emotions, reactions, and tendencies just below the surface? It's like we have animals inside us, and if we feed them, they grow. So if we don't feed the animals, what do we feed? Here's Greg Meyer with some food for thought.
We've been talking about not feeding the animals these past weeks. If you haven't been part of this conversation until now, go back to the first episode and check it out. But in short, these animals we're talking about are emotions, reactions, and inclinations that naturally live within us. They give us important information about what is happening in our lives, but the temptation is to act on them rather than on healthier, truer parts of ourselves. Envy is a good example. When you see something that your friend has that you don't, or notice something about them that you aren't, you may feel this little critter of envy stirring you. That's okay. Its message is that there is something that looks interesting or desirable to you. That's how we discover what's wonderful and beneficial about the world around us. It's all fine as long as you use the energy from that feeling to ask better questions like, do I really want that? Do I need it? Yeah, we miss that question a lot. Will it add value to my life? Or why do I want it? After you've wrestled with those questions a bit, you can decide what you will do about what sparked your envy. But at that point, envy isn't in charge. A truer part of you is. If you do let envy grow and take charge, then all that cool stuff other people have that you don't, it's going to make you go both crazy and broke. You'll lose who you are trying to be what everyone else is. These animals, they live within us. They're part of the landscape of your life, but aren't the destination. They can have a voice in your decisions, but shouldn't be making them. When they do, they create trouble for yourself, for others, and the world. And by getting you and me out of sync with who we really are, they get us out of sync with what the world is really about, with God. In terms of an image that helps me understand this, they unravel us from the fabric of existence rather than weave us in more tightly. Jesus lived to get us woven into that fabric. So he talked about this issue a lot and saw it as a matter of our hearts. Your heart, as he spoke of it, represents the core of your being, your identity. He reminded us that whatever we treasure most, what we decide is the most important and give the most space and power to, that is where our hearts are. That's what we filled our hearts with. We need to be honest about that. It matters what we let into our hearts. It matters that we let these animals start running our lives. We see how deeply these animals are embedded in our hearts when we try to weed them out. Because what we want to do is just take care of them, move them out, and move on. But there's a problem with that, which reflects a fundamentally unhelpful understanding that we hold of our lives. You see, there's this tendency for us to simply want to be okay, under control, good, fixed. And so we do what we have to do in order to get there. That desire to see ourselves that way avoids the inevitable discovery that we aren't. That the animal you thought was taken care of, that you thought was back in its cage, has crawled back out. The anger that you thought you'd worked through with your old boss, it reemerges over the election. The fear you faced over your parents' illness now rears its head because of climate change. And your ideal of being okay is dashed as all the old physical, emotional, and social feelings set up shop in you again. You thought you'd gotten over that and you hadn't. What's wrong? Well, nothing. To learn not to feed the animals is to learn to look at yourself and life differently. To take on a new paradigm other than the one of, I'm okay, or I'm not okay. And Jesus hits this right on the head in one of the events from his life. He was in Jerusalem at a pool called Bethesda. Yeah, like the hospitals, you'll see why. The pool was surrounded by people with sicknesses and injuries because there was this belief that an angel visited the water sometimes and disturbed or rippled the water. Then whoever got into the water first could be healed. When Jesus was there, he saw one man who had been ill for 38 years and been waiting around this pool. And so Jesus asked him the most ridiculous, duh sort of question. Jesus asks, do you want to become well? Well, what do you think, Jesus? I'm like, he'd been lying there for nearly 4 decades because of the view or something? Well, the man blows right by Jesus' question and instead explains why he is still ill. He tells Jesus that he doesn't have anyone to put him in the water. And before he can crawl to the pool himself, someone else always beats him to it. Do you get the idea that maybe that wasn't what Jesus was getting at? So Jesus responds to this, and this response was again curious. He didn't pick him up and carry him into the pool. He didn't walk over and touch him or anything. In fact, Jesus did nothing. He just says, stand up, pick up your mat, and walk. That's it, done. And the man does it. It wasn't about the pool or the angels. It wasn't about the illness or how long he's waited. It was just about the one question. Now, I don't know how miracle stories sit with you. Most people tell me they don't believe them. Maybe you don't either, and that's a sticking point for you. Well, here's what I'll tell you. The question isn't whether you believe them or not. No. You know, if I believe anything about miracles, it isn't that they are in the Bible for us to believe them and be impressed. No, they're in there to tell us something, something important. And this story is telling us that the challenge in your life, in my life, isn't fixing the thing that is bothering us at the moment so that we can go back to normal, but understanding that we are always under construction, always growing, always being healed. We aren't sick or healthy, we are in the process of healing. And the sooner we imagine ourselves that way, the sooner we can get on with life. Jesus' question to the man wasn't, what's wrong with you? Or how come you haven't gotten better yet? It was, do you want to become well? Do you want to heal or just be better? Because healing, becoming well or whole, which is the word that Jesus used, that what it really means, it doesn't stop when the latest symptom disappears. Healing is what people do. They continue to put their lives together, deeper and deeper, wider and wider, on a path toward wholeness. When we realize that, then we get up. We put our animals in their places and walk. Walk to what's next. For you and me, that means we need to be patient and persistent. This isn't over. You didn't want to hear that life is about a perpetual healing, not about getting fixed, did you? That you aren't getting a fix, but hearing a perpetual question asking you if you are willing to keep pushing up to the ground to grow. I know it's not the message I'd prefer, but I have to admit that it sounds a lot more like what I have learned from real life over the years. Learning to not feed the animals works this way. It's a posture, not an accomplishment. And that is certainly true about the animal that I want to spend some time with today, comparison. Learning how to not feed comparison is something we will do forever so that we can continue to be more whole. Comparison. You're no stranger to this animal. It lives in you and it lives in me. We've been saying that each of these animals has a role in our lives, and this is one that has a clearly useful role. Chris and I bought a new furnace for our house this week. Comparison was important. If you're deciding to go on a hike, well, you're going to compare routes to see which one makes the most sense for you, and you're going to check the forecast or different times of day to compare the weather and decide the best time to go. Makes sense. Comparison helps us a lot. When we start comparing ourselves, however, not just the things around us, it gets trickier fast. But comparison can still serve us well. If you look at what someone else is doing and realize, hey, I can do that too, it can be empowering and help you see your potential. Likewise, if you compare yourself with others who have gone beyond what you can and something important to you, and you can say, boy, how do they do that? That's something for me to learn. The person that you are comparing yourself to is modeling and inspiring you. That's the positive side of comparison, when it is serving you. There's another side to it, however, when comparison isn't serving but controlling you. You know how this works too. You look at others and you say things like, they're all so good at that. I have no idea how to do it. And your self-esteem takes a hit. Then there is what I call the greatest hits syndrome. When people tell you their cherry-picked and well-posed moments from their lives, or you see it on social media and wonder, what's wrong with you? They're always happy. I'm not. They're doing exciting things. I'm doing laundry. Their family is wonderful. Mine is, well, you know. I remember changing what I posted on Facebook some years ago when I looked at my own timeline and said, gee, I wish I had a life like mine. When this is going on, and it does, you know that comparison is driving the bus. And comparison is a lousy driver because on its own, it misses a couple of important turns and it crashes into your self-esteem, your sense of worthiness, and of value and ability. One thing that comparison doesn't see is the different arcs of people's lives. Of course, the people already at your new job are good at what you are struggling with. They've been doing it for a while, and you are still learning. They were new to it once, too, you know. Also, growth doesn't always happen the same way. Growth is seldom a straight line. It tends to spiral as we go round and round in life, gradually climbing upward, but often dipping down along the way. That's how it works. Some of your experiences that look like defeats or failures will be pivotal to the breakthroughs you would never have made without them. Okay, that's one thing. Another is that comparison, left on its own, misses the different gifts of people's lives. Sure, some people are better than you at math. You're gifted in the arts. They are great speakers. You're a great listener. They know how to create great plans. You know how to get things done. We are all different. Comparison isn't the tell-all. Cooperation and appreciation are. Strength comes from our diversity, not our similarity. Comparison alone doesn't know that. Comparison also misses the difference between societal norms and human values. It listens to all the faddish societal messages from the media and our peers. It sees the bright and shiny stuff that money, fame, and prestige can afford. And it concludes from all that, that that is what you too should do, be, and have. So if your house, car, grades, vacations, job, clothes, looks, whatever, if they don't measure up to your neighbors, there is something wrong with you. What there is actually something wrong with is the comparison. What is really important to you? What does the world really need? What is healthy for you and your family, the community, and the world? Those human values make more sense to check in with. Comparison can help us notice them, but it is our better senses of meaning, self, and satisfaction that should decide what to do with that awareness. Another wrong term from comparison, it misses a difference between the real and the ideal. This is the greatest hits syndrome that I mentioned earlier, the carefully curated social media portrayal. Comparison let loose from its cage so that reason and perspective can't rein it in, doesn't realize that these people are presenting their ideal and you are comparing it to your real, the behind the curtains view that you and only you have of your life. Well, guess what? Those perfect people you see, they have a real too. They just don't let you see it. And the real will never be as pretty as the ideal, but the real is real and the ideal is not. So here's a lowdown on comparison. There is always someone better than you and someone not as good as you. Substitute, talented, good-looking, wealthy, accomplished, influential, artistic, whatever. You can use that to make yourself feel miserable by looking at the people ahead of you in the line or to feel superior by looking at the people behind you. But that isn't really telling you anything. That's another harmful deceit of comparison. Everyone is determining where they are in the world by looking at everyone else. Comparison. But as interesting as that may be, knowing where you are relative to everyone else doesn't actually tell you much. Hi, honey, you called? Oh, you want to know where I am? Well, I'm next to a blue Prius, and there's a minivan and two SUVs just ahead of me. And then there's a Hyundai silver one, a couple of white cars, can't quite tell what kind, just behind me. Whoa, a little sports car just zoomed by us. That kind of answer, what is that? It's an answer based on comparison to all the other cars, but it doesn't actually say anything about where I actually am. There is no solid point of reference, nothing substantial. And by the way, you aren't a car, right? So what is meaningful for where you are? If your answer refers to how much money, prestige, power, fame you have, that's all relative. They aren't intrinsically part of the landscape of life. But what is? Yeah, that's a good question. What is a meaningful landmark or reference point for your life? Maybe it is money. Maybe it is possessions. Maybe it is appearance or influence. But I'm going to go out on the limb and say that I don't think it is. I think that's what you and I believe it is when we've been feeding the animal of comparison. And that animal will eat you up every time. Me too. Because like I said a minute ago, there is always someone better than you, and there's always someone worser than you. Yeah, I know that's not a word, but I liked it. And until you decide that that is not your point of reference, that you are looking to something else to decide where you are in the world, you are still stoking the flames, feeding the animal of comparison. So that leaves a question. Two, actually. But this is the first one. What does tell you where you really are in the world? What meaningfully indicates how you are doing with your one wild and precious life? I'm shocked and yet not really very surprised at how many people have no idea how to answer that question. That just goes to show how culturally normal it is for people to live with comparison at the helm of their lives. We aren't looking within for our grounding. We are looking around ourselves for it, and it's killing us. And it is making us millions of people all competing for the one world rather than one world working together as millions of people. Take time for that question for yourself. If your value, your worth is not determined relative to what others are, do, and have, then what lets you know how you are doing? What are your dreams? What are your goals? What is worth pursuing? And what would let you know that you are moving in the right direction? It's a question only you can answer, and it's worth spending some time with. Well, I said there were two questions. Here's the other. If you find that comparison has gotten the upper hand because you catch yourself beating yourself up for not measuring up to others, or you keep propping up yourself by searching for and pointing out flaws and inadequacies of the people around you, then ask yourself this. How old are those messages? When did you first start hearing them? Here's why this is important. The chances are that you didn't start those messages. These animals, you know, they travel from person to person and from generation to generation. They are let loose from the cages before we are ever old enough to hold the keys. Parents, siblings, playmates, TV commercials, they stirred up this critter when you were too little to know better. Come on, let's see who's faster. Oh, you are still playing with Q-Box 47? I used to have one of those. Look at my new W-Box 52. You make your bees funny. I bet you can't even write the whole alphabet. And by the time you understand who you are and what it means to be among all the people around you, that animal's voice is loud in your head, defining life as always being either ahead or behind. It's hard to learn better questions, but when we don't, we not only suffer, we pass it along to our children. We reinforce that kind of thinking at school and at work and among our friends and between us and the people we love. And Jesus tried to open our eyes when he said, "Look at the birds of the air. They don't plant or harvest, yet they're cared for. Are you not much more valuable than they? And the flowers of the field, they make no effort, yet what could be more beautiful?" If that is how God values plants that are likely never to be seen, just think how God values you. Yeah, you don't have to compete. You don't have to compare yourself to determine your value, your worth, or your worthiness of love. You are you. That is good. It is enough. But you will. It's because it isn't about getting it right once and for all. It's about continuing to learn and grow. It's about being healed your whole life long, not expecting it to be over. You and I are going to have to learn to spot that animal when it is out of its cage and to learn how to get it back in. So, how will you do that? How will you keep this animal of comparison from roaming beyond its territory into your heart? Well, let me give you some ideas. This would be some good homework to try out this week. And if you find that for you, like it is for me, this is an ongoing battle, you may want to keep revisiting it. First, listen for those negative self-messages, those self-critical thoughts. Each time one of them occurs, note it. Pause and tell yourself, "I'm doing it to myself again." Notice here that the influences may be coming from outside you. It might have been sparked by someone else saying something or doing something, but the animal that is out of control is inside you. That means you can do something about it. In fact, you are the only person who can do something about it. So notice the message and then drop it. It's okay. Just be aware of it. Take a breath. Let it go. Move on. Now, next, after a couple days of practice at catching these negative self-thoughts, formulate a response to them. Maybe you say to yourself, that's not fair. I'm more than that. Now, as you start realizing patterns or categories of self-criticism, your responses might be more specific. Like, that's not fair. I'm still learning. It takes time. Or it might be, that's not true. I'm not doing this worse or better. I just do it differently, and that's okay. Or, hold it. Is that really important? Do I need to be that way? Start shrinking that animal. You are showing it its way back to its cage. But it might be a long walk, and it might sneak away a couple times. That's okay. Just keep at it. Okay, next. Use your bus. This bus that I'm talking about is that caravan of very people who help fill out your life. One of the seats on your bus is for the encourager. Who can't use a couple of those, huh? Another is the mentor. Let someone who has been there help you find your way. Another is the stretcher. Get inspired. Let someone help you see what you haven't imagined yet and what is possible. Now, each of these people are there to help you see yourself positively, realistically, and potentially. Listen to them. Ask them questions about how they see you. They probably have a much more generous and gracious view of you than you do. Let them help you dissolve your hurtful self-thoughts. Finally, is there someone outside you who is feeding the animal inside you? Insulate yourself from that person. Insulate is an important word. It means to protect yourself from them. Avoid that person if possible, but if not, counteract them by bringing company and rehearsing your mental, emotional response to them. And remember that the reason they are doing this to you is that someone did it to them. They were taught to build up their self-esteem by tearing yours down. While their behavior is still inexcusable, they too are burdened by the animal inside them. Is there a way to help them take away their need to tear you down in order to build themselves up? Can you help them see their own worth independent of you or anyone else? It may seem like you are taking responsibility for someone else while you have your hands full just trying to do your own work, but this switch in perspective may be surprisingly empowering to you. So these animals, they hurt when they get fed and get big and out of control. They hurt you, they hurt others, they make the world less than what it could be. I like how Paul finished his letter to one of the communities of people who are trying to learn how to live aligned with God, woven into the fabric of all things. He wrote this, "Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, dwell on such things. And the God of peace will be with you." It matters what you let in your heart. Don't feed the animals.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.